This week on RSVNB Update, June Game Jam is upon us, featuring graphical reworks, quest cleanups, a massive slew of QOL updates, and more. We also delve into necromancy rituals and discuss what might be a massive shortage of slime. This is RSVNB Update, episode 942, recorded Thursday, July 6th, 2023, Rituals and Rundowns. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. A bit of a quiet week, update-wise, this week, but we have lots of Game Jam projects to talk about. We have new necromancy stuff to talk about, and to do that, Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week is Zerdones.
Hi there, glad to be back.
Resident person of Clan Quest, and now the RSVNB community. Too. You're pretty much a master quest kind of completionist person in game, aren't you? That's the best way to describe you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Good. You were one of our finds out of the pandemic, actually. I think it's about when you joined Clan Quest, right?
Yeah. Well, that's about when I started really playing RuneScape again. Like, I took a long break after. Actually, I think it was after The World Wakes came out, and I realized that I couldn't just not do EOC anymore, and I was like, hey, I'm out. But then shortly before the pandemic, I sort of came back in, and yeah, here we are.
Right on. Of course, you can find us in-game at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. We also invite you to follow along in our full show notes at update.show, and we do have a community Discord at rsbnb.com/discord as well. But before we get too far down the show, we're doing something a little bit different now. We'll talk about exactly what this is, but we have to issue a big, big, huge thank you to two important people this week who RSVNB Update. We wouldn't be where we are without them. So a big, huge thank you goes out to two of our Patreon supporters at the new RSVNB Update experience tier, Andrew C. and Jesse W. Big, huge thank you to these guys for supporting the podcast in the way that you do. And you're probably wondering, why are you guys doing a shout out and such a small shout out at the start of the podcast? Well, when it comes to Patreon time, we're going to explain exactly what this is about, but the Patreonscape be a changing, but more on that in a wee bit. So let's just go straight forth into Game Jam here. And you know, it wouldn't be a Game Jam without graphical updates from Mod Black Witch. And we're not going to go too far into the rationale behind these like we did with Karamja. But these ones, again, you know, it's just wow all the time, right? With what Mod Black Witch puts out.
I'm not calling her Mod Black Witch anymore. This is Mod Badass. I mean, period. End of story. Like,
yeah.
These were the ones that I'm. Well, actually, we'll go. There's quite a few graphical or visual kind of things in this year's Game Jam, but she. I love what she does, and. And we spoke about it in the pre-show. I mean, some areas are getting brought up to 2012, but hey,
progress.
It's what's needed.
Progress.
So the first two are the Varrock sewers, obviously, with the moss giants, and then the actual sewer contraptions there. Where is the third screenshot here? I don't know, and you guys can say I'm bad at this game.
That
for this.
That's the Polnivniak Slayer dungeon. That's the smoke dungeon.
Okay, that explains it. I never go there. That explains that one, 100%. Fair enough. And, you know, come to think of it, I did have to go there for some achievement recently when they added something to comp, I think. And, you know, thinking about it, yeah, that does look kind of familiar.
Yeah, I think there's something there related to Slayer Masters. Obviously, there's a mini quest there. It's a pretty good place to farm Banshees if you're looking for the Banshee scroll. That's for trim, not for comp.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. And then moving out of that Slayer dungeon, I think we have the Edgefield dungeon after this. Is this what we're looking at?
Yep, that looks like Edgefield dungeon.
Yeah. And once again, when it comes to things like Edgefield Dungeon, Varrock Dungeon, Varrock Sewers, that's so important because those are free-to-play areas, and that's something people are going to see as soon as they come to the game, right?
Yep, and they're some of the first dungeons you encounter.
Exactly. And what do you what do you do in MMOs? You go dungeon crawling.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a dungeon and you kill rats.
Exactly. Or, you know, go have your cat do something, but hey, it is what it is. I remember sending my cat down there to go kill rats for the level up.
Good times.
Yeah. So I think the dungeon ones are perhaps most stark because when you look at it, the dungeons have, of course, the RuneScape HD texturing applied to it, which, for people who don't know, the textures in things like the Polyvnich Slayer Dungeon, Varrock Dungeon, and Edgefield Dungeon, all of those textures there were procedurally generated by the client at the time. So, in theory, if you went down to some of these places like the Varrock and Edgefield Dungeons before Mod Blackwitch's lighting and texture updates, and you turned all your textures off on your client, you would be stepping back to 2007.
Wow.
Compared to where we are at now with, you know, the added walls and the extra levels of detail that are added to it. Then we turn the page and come to Ardoyan. And, you know, we're slowly but surely venturing south towards Yanil and some of the areas that haven't been updated yet in-game. I've always wondered when Ardoyan was going to come under the knife for this. I think it's long overdue, but once again, there's kind of always going to be that same sort of nostalgic sense amongst people that, oh, we're truly leaving this area behind because this is, you know, one of the last areas to have that RuneScape HD style of graphic to them, and now we're truly, truly moving away from that. Anybody feel sentimental about that?
If I do, I'll log in old school.
Okay, but you'd have to use 117 HD for that to get that, you know, texturized experience there.
Well, we have an add-on for everything, though.
Yeah, we definitely do in old school. But Starkest thing, skybox and lighting, I feel, with the Ardoyan stuff and the revamp market.
Mostly. I feel like because this was billed as resurrecting some older reworks,
yeah.
And that sort of goes with what Janice was saying about bringing stuff up to 2012, like the dungeon reworks, those are clearly like a lot went into those. The Ardoyan rework looks more like a lighting pass and a couple of textures,
yeah.
Which, I mean, looks fantastic. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that as a criticism, but yeah, it seems to be mostly lighting.
Yeah, and I mean, that's good enough in this case, right? It's not like we need to completely rip it out because I think Ardoyan actually got an update before RuneScape HD because I remember that was in some of the promo materials for it. Just the fact that you could see the entire market square there with the banners hanging overhead. So you're right.
Yeah, I mean, my stock objection to graphical reworks, and this is when I bring up every time Lumbridge gets another graphical rework, is it looks fine. It looks fine. It doesn't need to be brought up to the most ultra-modern textures or environment details. It looked fine in 2012. It looks fine today. Ardoyan looked fine then. It looks fine now. The dungeons look like shit.
Yeah.
They look awful. They look so much better now. Those are amazing. Ardoyan looks fine, and now it has atmosphere.
Yeah. Bingo. And, you know, I'd wager that if you took what we're seeing in the Ardoyan screenshots and you just put the old lighting on it, that would, I'd say that the lighting probably gets you 80% of the way there to these graphical updates here. So.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of textures, like the path textures are new, but
yeah. And, you know, I've talked with people and it seems to be hit or miss with people about whether or not the lighting updates are good, because I definitely prefer the warmer, brighter lighting that we've been seeing in these sorts of graphical updates. But I know people who prefer the more darker, muted tones with it.
Well, I think thematically the darker tones make more sense given like the story of East Ardoin.
Right.
Or West Ardoin.
We can go to West Ardoin. Because that one actually has changed into night, much like Draenor Village is at night now.
Yes, and that makes a ton of thematic sense. Because the whole point of that area is that it's a slum, it's the wrong side of town, it's in a bad way. There's something incongruous about the depressing plague area having the bright, happy, fun skybox.
Right? And the underground pass looks so menacing with this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's that too. But like you said, Tanis, Mod Black, which has become Mod Badass with this. So there's that. Also in graphical updates for this game jam, we're going to keep the graphical updates together as we move on with this. Mod Alex has done some graphical updates as well to the Necromancer's Tower, which is also in the Ardoin area and makes sense with necromancy on the way.
Yeah, this looks amazing.
Yeah.
No notes.
Yeah. Makes me wonder if this is going to have any sort of play whatsoever in the necromancy skill.
It sounded like it, like the way they worded it.
Yeah, I can see that. Because, yeah, Mod Alex said something to the effect of, like, we can't have literally the first necromancer in the game in his little two-story hut.
And have it look the way it does, right?
Yeah.
Though, we don't know how much is going to be in versus how much is going to be on the surface world. I think, based on the promotional material we saw, we'd expect the majority of it to be in but at the same time, you're probably going to need to venture out here at some point to have conversations with this person as well. So,
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
Mod Dragon has updated the starter outfits as well, and once again we're very heavily focusing here on the new player experience, which I feel was a great focus around mobile, but has kind of fallen off since then in terms of things that we're talking about. And we'll talk more about new player experience in another one of the Game Jam projects in a minute. But next we go to something that Mod Ramen has actually been teasing a little bit before this Game Jam post was made, and that you will now be able to change the color of your particles, should this one go into game, on your comp capes.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Fashionscape, watch out.
And the way I understand it is that what he has done is, with this, you are able to, in effect, choose the color particles from a selection of the 120 capes and just put them on the Master Max Completionist cape. We need to be clear that this is Master Max Completionist, not just Completionist, because Completionist is always going to be white. So you'd be able to choose, hey, you have one of the 99s, you can just pop that into Master Max. And I'm wondering if this is going to be another kick in the pants for people to go for 120 all.
Maybe. It almost made me want to do Completionist.
It's not very hard. I wonder what you're at in terms of progress.
Oh, I don't know.
We should check that out. We should check that out at one time, and if it's under 50 tasks, you could knock that out pretty quick.
Oh yeah, it's more than that though, I'm sure, just because like I have task sets to do. And
yeah, task sets are, those can be a bit of a pain.
I bet you have a run over to Dominion Tower to do at some point.
I will have some of that to do, but I'm more worried about the temple trekking and just
horrible
things.
Yeah, temple trekking is pretty bad. Yeah. The agile piece, I can't remember if it's the top or the legs you need. That's not great.
you know, since I have comp, I wonder if I should go for 120 all now to, you know, get a green Master Max completionist cape with green particles on it. That does seem kind of appealing now. I don't know. Maybe we should throw it out to the community as a sort of dare or something. Though I don't know if I want to be. We dictate enough around here with monthly bits and the like. I don't know if I want to have people deciding what I'm doing in game. That would kind of take the purpose away of playing for fun, wouldn't it?
$100 Patreon tier. Oh, Fane gets 120 all.
And then somewhere, no, that could be 500, and then 400 could be Shane has to learn how to solo Virago and Solak.
Oh.
No.
Yeah, good. Have fun with that.
No. But yeah, I like the Mod Ramen update. Then we go to Mod Shogun, who, Tanis, you put this the best way. Mod Shogun effectively has delivered a ninja strike here with his QL Palooza.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mod Shogun is king. This is amazing.
Abyssal Beasts will no longer shove you around when fighting them. The Ring of Kinship teleport is now faster. 4 ticks down from 10. Jesus, I had no idea it was that slow.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Button, rusted swords, and broken armors from dig sites and ham members are now notable. All right.
Hallelujah.
Why is that a big deal?
Because the best way to farm easy clues is pickpocketing ham members, and those are the only things that aren't noted. So
they wouldn't even be noted if you had your thieving cape with you?
Yeah, so if you're wearing your thieving cape, everything that you get from them is noted except for those three things. So what you end up with is half your inventory is full of noted, like, herbs and salvage and crap, and then the rest gets filled up with these buttons, swords, whatever, and you have to drop them or disassemble them. Some of them can't even be disassembled. Some you just have to drop them.
Wow.
So, like, put them on your action bar and just hold the key down.
Here's another fun one. You can now fast travel through the dense forests in the Elflands because you would have had to click on each individual piece of wood before. That's good.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Puzzle and not skip tokens now have a chance to drop from elite caskets in reduced amounts compared to hard clue rewards.
Pretty nice.
Archglacier minions now spawn slightly further back, and the Archglacier minions now spawn after the ice walls move in from left to right to telegraph it better. Oh, that's good. That's good. I remember that always being a little bit annoying about how they could spawn off to the side like that. And in effect, you'd have to jiggle yourself around to get into the right spawn. Archglacier minions' cores that they now leave behind now deal damage based on their life points up to 30k. Because when you think about it before, those cores really didn't do all too much, did they? Whereas now,
yeah, this one excited me, because I remember hearing that they did that, but every time I fight, like, it's like, you're doing nothing. This isn't actually helping.
Yeah. 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 That's a big one. And, you know, when it comes to Archglacier, it's, as we talked about, one of the most accessible bosses mm-hmm. out there. And at the same time, you look at normal mode compared to, you know, something like hard mode, it's something that can easily be camped. We go to Iron Raxors, who was on a few weeks back, his 60,000 kills there. This could definitely have an impact on that, I guess, if you were doing 5 mech normal. So right on that. Continuing on. The Scepter of the Gods now has bad luck protection. You can get it down to 1 in 20 compared to a base of 1 in 650.
Oh, man.
I feel like that's another comp or trim requirement out there.
No, it's another clue thing. It's best in slot clue preset because it's not infinite, but it's a lot of teleports to soften
the
them.
Pyramid,
and
yeah.
Soften them is other real pain to get to.
Right.
Okay. Not a real pain, but it's a bit annoying.
Yeah, because, I mean, otherwise you have to Metaphos Lodestone, take the shortcut across the bridge, and then run to the right pyramid. So,
yeah. So you can also use Pharaoh's Scepter, which is more common, but it holds fewer charges, so you have to recharge it more often.
Okay.
So Scepter of the Gods, that is a nice get.
Elite and Master Scan clues now change color depending on how close you are. They move from light blue to orange to red.
Again, amazing.
Where does that fall in the colorblind spectrum, Dennis? Light blue, orange, and red.
Can't see any of them, so I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, but it's from the filters I've seen in other games, it sounds like it's kind of stretching the across the different filters I've seen.
Yeah, and you know, I think when it comes down to it, we just need a way to filter and put a, you know, a colorblind filter on the entire UI, including, you know, inventory and text and all that. I think that's what you need at the end of the day for colorblind in RS, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lang weapon special attacks now deal damage. Instead of offering a combat buff, they deal 110 to 160 percent ability damage times 2. Okay, I'm going to have to look up what the cold cut was before, because I'm not 100% aware of this. I don't know exactly how shifting
right
this
now
is going to be.
Right now it just applies a...
increases your damage cap
just increases
by
your
30%
cap
for 30 seconds, applying for... melee, reflect, and dominion mind damage as long as melee is the primary combat style being used by the player.
Yeah, so they've moved that to the set effect and they've made the special attack do damage.
Okay. I think that's fair.
Yeah, that seems nice.
Yeah. And with this, the set effect, like you said, now increases your max hit cap by 30%, so you get the best of both worlds. Abyssal parasites are now always applied from the abyssal armor spikes. That was something that we said that was needed to make these things always something as a factor, I think, when we talked about the spikes and we talked about the abyssal scourge in terms of just, you know, providing an extra dose of damage, and the fact that it was a random chance if you were going to get it. The fact that this now always applies, I think, has the potential to change things. So we're going to have to do some analysis when these changes come out on this. I don't know where it's going to land, but I have a feeling this is going to be important.
Yeah, it's the whole reason I bought the whip back when I did.
Yeah. Also, abyssal parasites now only spread to other enemies if the Scourge is equipped. Which is fine.
That's the idea, so...
Yeah. And with this, abyssal parasites now stack up to 100 and deal less damage per stack, but last for 19.2 seconds compared to the previous 9.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long time. It's probably more damage in the end.
Yeah.
I would assume so.
And if I remember correctly looking at this, these were some of the changes that... have been long said to, you know, kind of just make this a core part of that tier 92 melee whip playstyle on this. So hopefully these ones make their way into production, and when they get there, we'll do a full analysis on them. And as well, the Abyssal Scourge now has a 9-second charge period. And they say, while these changes may seem ready to introduce into the game, there's some still some QA that needs to be done before they can be brought live. Fair enough. So like you said, that's the Modshogun Ninja Strike. And then with that, we head on over to one of the ones I think that warrants a deeper discussion in terms of what this does for everybody out there. And this is another batch of Mod Stew's quest changes. In that, with assistance from the lore community, Monstu says he has identified where quests have some redundant requirements and is getting rid of them. The aim is to look at simplifying the complex web of quest requirements where possible, so it's less daunting. Along the way, there's also been a little QOL done to some of the quests while they're under the knife, such as graphically updating Azinadra in Desert Treasure, or moving the archaeology collection prompt on the Goblin Village Generals into their dialogue tree to clean things up. So, first quest we look at here is the Curse of Arath. And the difference between this one is that right now, looking at this, it in the new scheme will require the Tale of the Muspa, Missing My Mummy, Defender of Rock, and Temple of Ikov, whereas previously it required Tale of Muspa, Missing My Mummy, Defender of Rock, Troll Romance, and the Shades of Morton. And with that, they completely just knock off the requirement of Troll Romance and Shades of Morton with this. And we're going to see that this is a general trend that they're doing throughout this. And I know when we were looking at the way of getting through things with Fresh Start, that this was one of the biggest things out there, is trying to figure out, you know, how do you level up best with quests? Well, you got this huge complicated web of quest requirements that just sometimes makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. These are welcomed. Well, I didn't think we'd ever see it.
No.
Yeah.
Here's another stark one. Desert Treasure used to require Dig Site, Tourist Trap, Temple of Ikov, Priest in Peril, Waterfall, and Troll Stronghold. Now only requires Dig Site, Troll Stronghold, and the ability to enter Mauritania.
Desert Huge. Treasure is such a funny quest.
Yeah, well, but it, what's nice is, like, it's really just getting to the things that you actually need. Like, yeah, why would you need Troll Stronghold? Well, I mean, well, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's the trend for a lot of these, is a lot of the requirements, they don't really seem to have any logic behind them. They're just sort of there. Like, I think for Desert Treasure specifically, like, the story of how Desert Treasure got made is actually really interesting. I won't go into it now, but if you're interested, hit me up on Discord and I will relay the story as I heard it. But it's very interesting, and I think Desert Treasure specifically has a lot of wrecks basically for no reason. Like, literally explicitly for no reason except to justify the rewards.
I feel like it was the first master quest out there, wasn't it?
I don't know about that. It had an odd development history. It kind of got cobbled together sort of at the last minute from pre-existing bits.
I think I might know the story you're talking about. We'll have to talk about this after, because I feel like we could be here a while if we did.
Yeah, it's kind of a long story, so I don't want to get into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, the point I'm making is, yeah, a lot of these requirements on these quests, they seem like they're just sort of there because quests need requirements, and these are the quests that we had at the time, so let's put them on.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think of Desert Treasure, in particular, you know, Tourist Trap, I believe is back in the day, you used to have to go to that jail to fight one of the guys in the desert to get one of the diamonds.
I don't know. Maybe originally you did. Yeah. I know now
you don't. Yeah, exactly. And Priest in Peril, obviously you would have had to do that back in the day to get into Mauritania, because one of the fights is right there. I don't remember where the other two were, but I think that kind of is where you lean into these requirements on that. So,
some of these just don't make sense.
Yeah, then we have Defender of Arrak, which now requires Shield of Arav, Knight Sword, Family Crest, and What Lies Below. Whereas previously it was Shield of Arav, Knight Sword, Demon Slayer, Temple of Ikov, Family Crest, and What Lies Below. So they struck Demon Slayer off of there, because we know in modern RS3, Demon Slayer is not, you know, a major quest milestone for if you're going through the quests in the main order, and also gone is Temple of Ikov. Heroes got really interesting on this list. You still need the 56 quest points and a bunch of skills, but now for quests you only need Shield of Arav and Dragon Slayer. Previously it was Druidic Ritual, Lost City, and Merlin's Crystal.
Yeah, this one, again, these ones feel like these were the big quests at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it felt kind of thematic to be like, yeah, you're a hero. You did all the quests.
Right, and we see the same thing with Legends Quest. Still 107 quest points, but now only Heroes and Jungle Potion. Whereas previously it was Heroes, Family Crest, Underground Pass, Waterfall, and Shiloh Village.
But see, what's nice about that is, so it's still the same quest points, which means you can fill it however you want.
Yep. How long did it take you to get 107 quest points in Fresh Start?
Oh, not long. I think I had that by the end of day one.
Well, there you go.
I don't remember, to be honest with you, but it was quick.
All right. My Arm's Big Adventure is Edgar's Ruse and Jungle Potion, where previously the feud was in there for some weird reason.
I think it's because you need camel dung. So the feud tells you where to get that. But we don't, like, you don't need that anymore. Like, we know how to.
We know how to pick up camel excrement, right?
Yeah, we know where to find the camel poo.
Yeah.
It's not a mystery.
Yeah. Ritual of the Majorad. Interesting that they touch this. With this, now it's Templates and Tistin, While Gothic Sleeps, Hazil Cult, Inakra's Lament, The Slug Menace, Fairy Tale 2, Cabin Fever, A Tale of Two Cats, and Fight Arena. So with that, what has been struck from that list is that that Fairy Tale 3 became Fairy Tale 2. Gone is Rocking Out, replaced with Cabin Fever.
Yeah, this one's interesting because they basically just moved the requirements further back in the quest
chain. Down the tree, yeah.
Which, again, kind of makes sense because I think for Fairy Tale, I don't remember, and I didn't look this up ahead of time, although I should have. I guess you need access to the Fairy Ring Network.
Which you get at the start of Fairy Tale 2.
Right. And then for Cabin Fever, you just need access to Mostly Harmless, which you get at the end of Cabin Fever. You don't need to go through Rocking Out, which is two more quests down the chain.
And at the same time, put yourself in the picture here of somebody who is playing through the Majorad storyline. You can say, my end goal is Ritual of the Majorad. Well, if you remove a few quests along the way, it allows that person to get there in a more orderly manner, I feel. And I think this could also have ramifications for anybody, like, say, down the line, if we were to ever have like a quest tournament thing, you know, like first person to get to whichever quest, right?
So. Yeah, definitely simplifies that entire path.
And there's still a shitload of requirements.
I mean, like
they didn't lessen them.
Just
move them back in the line.
It's just what would the requirements of Ritual of the Majorad be if the quest came out today, knowing what you need in that quest?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then in Wanted, now it's just recruitment drive and the ability to enter the Abyss and Mauritania. Previously, it was the Lost Tribe, Priest in Peril, recruitment drive, enter the Abyss, and 33 quest points.
Now, this one actually was interesting. I wanted to talk about this one because I think this, unless Stu is doing more work to the actual quest itself, I think this is an error. Because as I understand it, you actually do at one point need to go to the Dorgishan Mines, which you get access to during the Lost Tribe. Like, if you haven't gotten to a certain point in the Lost Tribe, you can't get into the mines behind the Lumbridge Castle basement. So you just literally cannot access this area, I think. It's possible they've changed that. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
Wiki still says you need to have completed the Lost Tribe quest.
Well, the wiki, I had it open, I turned it down. If you scroll down in the wiki to creating for information predetermined items, one of the ones that it says you always need, it's always the fifth location, is the Bone Spear, which will take you to the Dorgishan Mines.
Ah.
So I think that just always happens. It's always, it's always fixed.
Right.
So you always need access to that location in order to complete the quest. So, I mean, it's possible that that will just be changed so that you don't need those fixed locations. maybe the Ruin Essence Mine can probably stay, but you could change it so that the first two, the Champions Guild and the Dorgan Mines, are just two other things from the random rotation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I guess would have to be based on what quests you have done. But
unless
there's more work happening.
Right. And I mean, if there's one JMod who's going to be able to sort through all this, it's Motstu, just
knowing what
the guy knows and everything. So
definitely. And I know he likes working with people who are passionate about this kind of stuff. So I imagine this has been considered.
Yeah. Well, Gothic Sleeps now requires Defender of Varrock, Dream Mentor, the Legends Quest, the Path of Glaufrey, Tears of Gothics, Wanted, the Hunt for Surok, Shiloh Village, and the Temple of Ikov, in addition to the Warriors Guild and its skill requirements. And what this does, from the looks of it, is it strikes the Hand in the Sand and King's Ransom from this list as well. Those are the only ones that are.
And then it adds Temple of Ikov.
Right, and adds Temple of Ikov and Shiloh Village.
Shiloh, yeah.
Which makes sense. Yeah. Shiloh Village makes sense given the Duradel situation there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And how did you? I guess what they. And that's another case of just moving it down the tree, because otherwise it would have been Legends Quest, but now Shiloh Village just gets you access to that area and that Slayer Master previously.
Yep.
And Temple of Ikov, obvious in that regard as well. So. Wonderful. And the thing I think that we learned from this is that after we go through and we complete these quests, most of the time we say, hey, that's one and done, we're moving on sort of thing, right? And we don't really think about quest requirements going forward. But one thing this does highlight, in addition to that, is that we can update quests, and we can update, in general, the rewards of quests along the way to make them more relevant to current year. But with that, you have these quests, you know, going way back in history, like the Hero's Quest, for example, that still have their original requirements on them, when you could make it just a tiny bit simpler by modifying the quest chain. And as you said, Zerdones, a lot of this stuff was just arbitrary back in the day. So, hopefully... Yeah. And, you know, I think it just goes with the way modern quest requirements are done as well. So, some smart changes there. As with most of these game jam things, just, you know, a no-brainer to put into the game. And some of the things are just outright new, which is what we're gonna move on to next. But before we do that, I just want to thank our Patreon supporters for this week, because, as I mentioned, something new is afoot in the RSBNB Update Patreon offerings. But this week, I'd like to thank Alaska, Alfie S., Amos Reed, Anatoly D., Andrew C., Arvitz L., Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, G. Hammy, Guy LaFleur, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jesse W., Jim M., Keski, Killer Snowball, Ling01, Malinoric, Maniac RS, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Ricky A, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Tabby, Tanner JW, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Ukulele Steve, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And, you know, we've been doing this now, this Patreon offering here, since June of 2018, and we've kept the tiers the same ever since. We've had something at every level that starts at a very affordable $1 a month. And with that, you receive a special mention in our show notes. You gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, and you also get the ability to vote on our monthly bit topics and attend our monthly roundtables. And with that, you're also funding the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. And with that, you get as well our most recent monthly bit, a foray into some hypothetical archaeology sites that Sirion, Thaxi, and myself put together this week. You can find that in full at patreon.com/RSBNB. I have a bit of a preview for that in a minute. But first, also, we have our VIP tier at $3 a month, where you will receive a special rank on Discord, which includes chat channel access, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and high-quality stereo versions of the show. Then we also have our insider tier, where for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, people at that tier also get our yearly Christmas card, in addition to everything else. And we are adding something new here moving forward. And this came as the result of actually consulting with our community here. And this is what we're calling the RSVNB Update Experience tier. You are a premier member of our community. With that, you get our platinum shout-out, just as Andrew C. and Jesse W. did earlier today. And with that, you also have the option to schedule an attendance of a live RSVNB Update recording, VIP treatment, and experience of pre-show, post-show, and everything in between. And you also have the option of a direct one-on-one Q&A with this on a discussion topic of your choosing. And, of course, every 3 months, thereabouts or thereabouts after, we'll be sending out a special mail out to these people, including either maybe a physical item or some digital goods, depending on where we're at in that point in time. And this is just something for people who want to give a little bit extra as well and maybe get something back from the podcast. But of course, a big, big, huge thank you goes out to everybody who's supporting RSVNB Update over the years. It truly means the world to us. And I should note that the experience tier has a limit of 10 patrons only, and two of those slots are already taken up as of recording here. So if it sounds interesting, if you want an extended shout out, or you maybe want to be part of the live show experience, listen in, take part in pre-show and post-show, this is the tier for you. But of course, big huge thank you to everybody. Your support truly means the world to us, and thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
You guys ready to hear about the archaeology sites? And neither of you guys were here for this, so it'd be interesting to hear what you guys have to think of this teaser. So let's just give this a listen right now.
All right.
So I have a question for you with this.
Sure.
With this dig site, assuming that you would be able to do this, does this prevent or basically provide the antidote from not doing a gnome finale?
No, you have to do a gnome finale before you do this, I think.
What I think, and this is one of the reasons I went with this particular site, is it removes some of the load from this gnome finale.
Okay.
Like, that's a big problem I think a lot of these quest series have, right? Like, they build up, they refer so many things. There's so many little sub-storylines that get opened that it is almost impossible to tie all of them up perfectly. Like, this is one of the big criticisms that Jarix always gets when they release, like, a finale. What about this NPC? What about this person? What about, you know...
Well, the gnomes don't have a lot of that. That's, I think, part of why it hasn't been done, is that, like, there's not a ton of storylines to, like, tie in and together. It's this one quest line. And, like, there's some other, like, little odds and ends, but in terms of Arpasandra itself, like, we've wrapped a lot of the gnome stuff up without it.
Yeah.
Versus,
you're right.
A lot of the desert stuff couldn't be wrapped up without Menophos, you know? Like,
no.
Or the elf stuff without Prif. Like, that whole series line, they had to go there to wrap up all of these other things that were going on in the world.
I accept this. Like, the gnome series is pretty isolated in a sense.
Very
I mean,
so,
it interacts
yeah.
with the elf stuff a little bit, but
true.
But I still sort of, I see there's the actual people history, there's the actual anima stuff. Like, that almost seems like sort of two separate threads, and this allows the designers to just offload half the story to the dig site and the other half story to the quest and give both of them the amount of time that in the spotlight.
Like, in my very optimistic brain, like, this would be a new hub city, right? So I looked it up, by the way. Menophos was, we got contact in 2007. We got Menophos in 2017. So 10
also
years.
Also 10 years. Yeah.
Also 10 years.
The gnomes are being
so
skewed over here.
I would love this to be like a high level hub city for some of the skills that don't have one yet, right? Like,
invention.
So Prif has its own adventure. I think this would be a good reward space for some of the like invention or divination kind of has something in it. But like you could put other things, like you're saying with the Animal Monday, you could put a new divination training method in there. You could put like a handful of things in this city that are activities wise that are interesting and engaging in a new environment. Like you could put some necromancy shit in there with these weird mind controlled, like warped creatures. You could like new Slayer creatures, right? Like you've got options to put activities in this space and to really use it. And I think it would be a really fun thing to like have as the story for a year, right? We've talked about how if we should go to a more like syndicated seasons kind of model. We're currently in the like necromancy and Fort 4 and 3 kind of a season. If the next season was gnomes and they did a bunch of stuff with Arpasandra, I think that would be super cool, right? Like that's an open space for them to use.
Yeah, and then one thing we've learned with 4 and 3 is that you add the area and then you add on to it throughout the entire season.
And that's what I want with this. Like, this could be a total, like, you do the quest to get access to it. Doesn't, like, you know, the end of the Gnome series, and it's, you know, a mid-level 4 and 3, not something that's quite so introductory level.
Yeah.
And you know, you go from there.
And here you have it, Sierra. You start with a mini dig site, and you're basically building the next season.
We're planning an expansion.
I mean, I was trying to keep the ambition a little bit low so that they actually do it.
Yes, well, I mean, I love the idea of the illusion magic for any kind of content associated with it. And I want the gnome finale, so I'm right there with you.
There's the hint, guys. This monthly bit, we talked about three archaeology mini sites, and obviously one of them is the gnomes. Another one is Prif, and one. The other one is Crandor. And with that came a discussion. Oh, wow. I guess maybe at this point it kind of paves the way for a new gnome finale quest. And it was an hour of discussion like what you just heard there, talking about mini dig sites. That was a snippet from our discussion on the gnomes. Tanis and Zerdones, what do you guys think of where we landed on these?
Oh, I love the idea of a gnome archaeology site. Can you imagine the cool artifacts that gnomes would have with their
illusion magic?
But when I think gnomes, I think just machinery and just.
We went there, you know, too. We went there, and, too.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think it would make some really cool artifacts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what like one of the real strength of archaeology is the ability to do like world building storytelling around the different cultures in the game. Like that was the big thing with the Dragonkin particularly, was like we didn't really know a whole lot about them. Like we knew a lot of individual Dragonkin, we knew sort of like details about how they operated, but we didn't know much about like what they were before. So archaeology kind of filled that in a bit. And yeah, I think the gnomes, for all their presence in the world, they are kind of underserved in the world building aspect. So I see that could be interesting. I like, because the thing with the gnome finale, the line we've always gotten is we foolishly promised you Arpasandra. We don't know how to deliver Arpasandra.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. We can kind of get halfway there with a gnome mini dig site, and then maybe, you know, that puts enough emphasis that the next storyline kind of meanders off that direction.
Another thing that I was considering sort of as I was listening is maybe Arpasandra itself is the dig site. Like, that's all, like, Arpasandra is just ruined.
That's where he was going to put it, in particular in the area between Laledia and the Underground Pass, that mountain range.
Right. I do feel like that would be a little bit of a cop-out if
it would be.
We quote-unquote get Arpasandra, but it's just a bunch of ruins and some archaeology excavation sites. But
Yeah. And, you know, you can hear all about that on this month's monthly bit. In addition to that, I mentioned Crandor was another one we discussed. What happened there before Elvarg torched the place, and then the clearing underneath Prif. What can we uncover there? Lots of stuff that we could kind of expand on the elves lore, and you know, given that the elf storyline is done, sure, but there's always just, like you said, Zerdones, tons of world building that can happen there. So, but back to Game Jam, Mod Sponge is working on a new piece of jewelry with a new gemstone here. given the shade of blue green to it, I'd imagine this is something necromancy themed.
I think that's a safe bet, especially given that they call attention to it in the news post.
Yeah. Is this a tier above or below Alchemical Hydrix?
Honestly,
it might be on par with it. Just it's a necromancy related ring.
Yeah, or, I mean, visually, it looks very similar to the classic amulets, like the tier one lowest level style specific amulets. So my immediate thought was, oh, this is the amulet of necromancy. This is your like plus 15 or whatever it is. Necromancy.
Oh, okay. Okay. So nothing like alchemical onyx or hydrix level then.
I mean,
probably not.
Maybe. I struggle to see anything that would supplant EOF, assuming EOF works with EOF and Amulet of Souls. Assuming those work with necromancy, I struggle to see what at the high end could supplant them. I could see there's room for something in the low to mid level.
Yeah, and this would have to be that then, because like you said, how would you replace EOF?
But it may be something even... See, it doesn't have to be that good. It could just be a new gemstone that you find in and it makes a regular old amulet like Zardoz is saying that has the plus whatever necromancy. Maybe it'll also is the theme behind like why you can commune with the dead or how, you know what I mean? Like they could do a whole thing. Like it could just be a new kind of stone.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing with a new combat style is there's room for all this level 1 or level 10. Level 20 stuff.
Yeah, and then that's my question to you. What's missing aside from just, you know, generic stat buffs in terms of, like, jewelry? Obviously, we don't know for necromancy itself, but if we were saying, you know, let's look at, say, the level band of 20 to 50 for our existing styles, what's missing?
Well, what's in the annual space right now?
Because I feel like... You have, you know, Amulet of Strength, Amulet of Power,
Amulet of Fury, Glory.
Yeah.
I mean, most of these don't... I guess Dragon Rider Amulet has an effect.
Yeah, and that's locked behind a quest, too, a fairly significant quest.
Yes.
So, and, you know, just looking at this, I'm wondering if... That when this gets applied to necromancy, is this going to be something that's a specific necromancy effect, or is this going to be something that, you know, is a benefit that you can take to other combat styles as well? I think the way they were leaning, they'd probably just go, you know, typical standard necromancy effect with everything wanting the focus to be on necro, right?
Yeah,
that's where I lean.
So, nonetheless, I think we can jump up and down about this when it arrives, and hopefully it does. But also on the necromancy angle, that undead Rex Matriarch is a game jam project here. And boy, I certainly hope that this one makes its way in.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
They're calling it Skeletal Trex.
Oh, that's cool.
As a product of mods Camel, Abe, and Fowl, the fourth Rex Matriarch. So,
I'm sure this will make it in. After skill releases, boss releases are one of the bigger updates. So I think this would be a good one to throw out. You know, maybe the end of the year, next year.
Exactly. Give people some time to level up necromancy, get a feel for it, because, you know, based on the existing matriarchs, I'd say that you'd probably want somewhere around what 80-ish, based on where you want to be for magic and ranged and melee stats for the other ones.
Yeah, in there. What's the recommendation for matriarchs?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
90 plus.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
You can do it. I mean, the thing with the Matriarchs is they have, like, even if you're using their affinity,
yeah,
their style weakness, they still have very high defense.
Exactly. And you know, that underscores something else, I think, that while we're here, that I don't know if this is in the scope of a game jam project that could be looked at and pulled on. Accuracy rework? Because let's not forget how many bosses in-game completely just ignore it.
We are getting an accuracy rework. It's called Necromancy.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like, we're seeing the seeds of that in Necromancy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess so, eh? Okay.
I think there's a lot of stuff in Necromancy that I want to see brought to the other styles, but we'll see how
they... and like they said, it's like, how do you get to EOC 2.0 without completely redoing it? Well, it's Necromancy. Exactly.
Yep.
So. Yep. All right. Next up on this list, the new player guild. This goes back to that first-time user experience here. This is from mods Forza, Melkor, and Libla. They say this is like the Champions Guild, but for when you're just finding your feet. And with this, it was some early game questing with the intent of helping players get started. Okay. Am I the only one asking why for this when, you know, we have
I'm
been asking
where?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like where? Like we have Tutorial Island for non-mobile people. We have Dave and Dale for mobile signups. Mm-hmm. Another tutorial on questing?
Maybe
maybe it's just not being presented properly here, but I'm asking myself why.
Well, you're asking yourself why because of our recent kind of acknowledgments, which is okay, this is specifically catering to new players.
Yeah.
When we talked about the new player experience, that's new accounts.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to be new players, right?
Yeah.
So we actually enjoy the improvements that they make with the new player experience because we do things like fresh start worlds and da, 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 da. This is only going to be for new players. And where are they? We've been looking for them for a while. Where are they at? They're other accounts. So are my alts going to hang out in the player guild?
No.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I see the point you're making, and I both agree and disagree, because on the one hand, yeah, this is the kind of update that would be basically dead on arrival. Like, this is Het's Oasis, except there's no reason to go back. For any reason, basically, except for the contract.
This is like how to get into quests, basically. But I think the tutorials, both on Davendale and Tutorial Island, already do this.
I think the problem with those is they're isolated from the rest of the game. They don't really. Because I remember, here's an embarrassing story from my youth. When I started playing the game in 2004, I created probably a half dozen alt accounts. Because I liked playing the game, but once I got off Tutorial Island, I had no idea what to do. So I just created another account and played Tutorial Island again because it's fun. I wanted to play the game, and this is fun. So I think the problem with Tutorial Island, and I haven't played Dave and Dale myself, but I expect it has a similar problem, is it doesn't do a good job teaching you how to play RuneScape. It does a good job of teaching you how to play Tutorial Island.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where the Berthort paths do a little better, where they integrate you into the game world a little bit more organically.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I found that with my Fresh Start account. I found that with, you know, the experiments I did. And that leaves me asking, you know, why here? Because there's introductions to paths and questing with that. So it's like, what do you get out of this? Maybe, and I want to give, we've been very kind to everybody here, and I want to give these JMods the benefit of the doubt here. And assume that maybe we're missing something from this in terms of maybe it offers some sort of benefits to new players. Maybe it's a new player hub. Maybe there's something that they can get here that helps them off in their adventures, just like we got all those tools to help us in Fresh Start. That would be interesting if it did that.
Yeah, I think we don't have a lot of... We're not really given enough information to really judge how effective this is going to be. I'll tell you what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
Because the other big problem with the existing tutorials that are in-game right now, particularly with Tutorial Island, although Birthwart Paths has it to a slightly not the same extent, but one of the problems they have is they introduce systems well before you're ready to use them. There's two related problems. One problem is they introduce you to systems well before you're ready to use them, and then they expect you to know them later. And then they only introduce you to systems that existed at the time. Like Tutorial Island basically introduces you to every system that existed in RuneScape in 2005.
Yeah.
And basically nothing since. So what I'd like to see is I would like to see a location that teaches me the basics, and then when I'm ready for something, I can go and it'll get me into it. When I want to learn how to fish or how to cook, I can go and this will teach me how to do that. This will be, I can help you with that.
Right, so you click on a fishing spot and it would send you somewhere.
Right, it's there when, maybe not send you somewhere directly, but it's there when you need it.
Yeah.
It's there when you want it and when it's most relevant to you. And it's more modularly designed so you can add more systems to it without it becoming overwhelming. Like, I don't know if either of you played the original Birthwart tutorial.
No.
I didn't, but I watched a couple of years ago, Mod Stew was doing a live stream series.
This tutorial.
He did, I think, 6 hours on this one with Mod Jack because it was built, it was meant as like new members onboarding, so new paying members. But then it got expanded to be like the new everyone tutorial. And one of the design remits that they got from management was this needs to introduce every skill. So the consequence is that the tutorial is like 3 hours long.
Oh my
and
God.
Every time you add a new skill, you have to add another like 10 minutes to that tutorial.
But archaeology doesn't need a tutorial because you get that at the guild.
Well, exactly. And I mean, they abandoned the Birthwart tutorial for partly that reason, because it's so unwieldy. Like, if that's the design philosophy you want to cater to, then that balloons horribly when you add new skills. So something like a new player guild could solve that problem, and I put solve in air quotes, but they could solve it by having it not be something you have to do, but something you can do. It's here if you want it. If not, okay, see you later.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And I mean, with Necromancy also giving you weapons that are going to level up with you as you go, what's to say? I firmly believe that we do need a set of weapons that just level up with you as you go that, you know, maybe aren't as good as, you know, the ones you make, but have that as an option like we did in Fresh Start. And I think New Players Guild would be a perfect spot for something like this.
Yep.
But
I agree.
But I would just love to learn more about this just so we can get an idea of where this is going, because on the surface, it really raises more questions than it answers, is how I'll put it. So,
I think there's potential here, but we don't know enough.
Bingo. And then we go to Mod Breezy's avatar. Boy. Wouldn't that be something? Player avatar rework as a game jam.
Not a game jam. Not a game jam.
Reworked aura icons.
Yeah, this is nice.
You can actually immediately tell it what these are from a glance. And I don't know about you guys, but that's a problem I have with the aura system, is I can't tell what the aura is unless I mouse over them. Whereas with this, over time, you're going to learn the way they go.
Yeah, much more readable.
Yeah, and I toggled mine to words anyway, but those are a lot better.
another fun thing with this is that if you look at it, it's actually more clear on the sides what tier they are, in that they add the little triangles rather than just coloring them in.
Well, they add the triangles, they make them different colors, they change the shape of the icon, like the overall outer shape of the icon. Like, they do a lot to make it immediately readable.
And then also different border edges too, as we see with the Supreme Salvation that's shown off here. So yeah, this is another one that's a no-brainer that I think has to go in.
Yeah, this is great.
And then with that, just a quick mention to the Daemonheim mini site. That's still being worked on. We did give that a bit of an honorable mention in our monthly bit on our mini sites. And a typical reminder, as they say with these, is that they say everything here is subject to internal reviews, scheduling, and testing. While these projects may appear complete in places, all Game Jam projects take a significant amount of additional work to implement, and not all Game Jam projects shown may make it into the game, and we can't offer a timeline or guarantees of Game Jam content releases. Makes sense.
Well, we know that, and we also know that the last couple Game Jams, nearly everything on it did make it in, so you know.
Yeah, and you know, that's,
we get it.
To that credit, that goes to the devs for just putting in the amount of work to it. You know, I think the only ones we didn't go over were the Goblin graphical update, and I'll just give those a mention now since we're here. Courtesy of mod Damo and Wav, new goblin imagery once again, something that people are going to encounter at the very early levels of the game. Mod Dorn has been working on QOL, specifically around clues, removing the delay from all challenge scrolls, speeding up NPCs handing out easy clue scrolls faster, and fixing a variety of text and typo errors. So you can imagine those going with the other ones we talked about into some sort of clue industry. So
yeah, that one made me very happy.
Yeah,
I hate the lag on challenge scrolls. It's like it's like one tick too long.
Right, and you know, you can feel it.
as
players, we can feel it, and it has an impact. So,
well, particularly if you do them so quickly, if you do them quickly enough, you're ready to put the number in. But you put it into just one tick too early because it's just too slow, and you end up hitting your keybinds and canceling out of the dialogue. And
RIP.
Yeah, it's one of those just annoying little moments that it's so good to have smoothed over.
All right. Necromancy, rituals, non-combat skilling. We have a better picture now of how this is going to work. Rituals, non-combat side of necromancy, kind of the same way we have alchemy and the other spells in magic, but from what I can see here, more advanced than that. They take place at the ritual site in the city of and with this, you begin by selecting the ritual you want to perform from your available ritual roster, and with this, each ritual has a set of requirements, and it shows you what you get for completing the ritual. So on this screen, we see inputs that you can choose from. So bones, big bones, baby dragon bones, wyvern bones, broken mementos, fragile mementos. And that's all we can see in the list. And it shows as well in terms of glyphs, light sources as well. And we'll talk about how all that lines up right now. But UI-wise, I feel like I already know a bit about the skill looking at this, and I feel like it's going to be something that's going to be relatively easy to wrap our brains around, I want to say, based on what I see here. I feel cautiously optimistic yet again with this in terms of the UI. You guys agree? Mm-hmm. Disagree?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good UI. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it looks simple enough to me. I have some questions about, like, once you get past this part when you're doing the setup.
Yeah, okay.
Really curious about, like, what some of these things are. But more importantly, I think, than even the non-combat side of rituals is the ecosystem that they're building with them.
Oh, the lean on bones, which has previously only been prayer, right?
Yeah, but you're getting materials from doing the rituals. Those material, like, you're getting secondaries that you would, I think that you need to do runes and just.
And the potions the whole, as well. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole, like, running of necromancy, you get the materials from rituals, which makes a really cool ecosystem that it will ensure that skillers have a place as well.
Which is something you were hoping for going in.
No.
So. We'll run through the flow here. So the input is a focus, which is a unique centerpiece for each ritual based on its intent. So bones to attract souls, for example. And these can also be stored in a box on the ritual site. And with this, along with the focus, you need to set up the ritual site with two components, which is the glyph, where you use ghostly ink to write in the language of the dead. These can be functional or later alteration glyphs that will change elements of the ritual, and a light source. And they say, what ritual could be complete without candles?
Gotta have mood lighting.
Yep. And with this, you'll get different outputs. You get the XP, you get reagents, which is what you're talking about, Tanis, resources used in necromancy, such as Impure Essence for necrotic runecrafting or equipment upgrades. And then souls, which is the number of souls you'll attract, which is needed to access more talents. And we learn later on in the post here that you can optimize your rituals for either XP, reagents, or souls, or some combination of each, which I think is really neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similar to what you can do with divination, where you can choose what's more important to you. Are you more interested in the XP, or are you
more interested in money? And yet it looks so much more engaging than air fishing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So you start by selecting the ritual to perform at the pedestal, which will then place down your focus object. And then you'll need to clean the glyph stones, which is a simple click. And with this, they're highlighted in a bright yellowy green color, which hopefully this is the color it'll be. I don't know, Tanis, if you looked at these, if you could see that yellow greenish outline.
I didn't see them at all. I'm hoping for mouse over text, so as long as I see something pop up, I'll be able to click on it.
Okay. So anyways, then you draw the glyphs in their ghostly ink, and then you place the light sources, and then you begin the ritual. They say the ritual will last a set amount of time based on its level and its alteration, and no inputs will be required once the ritual begins, but you may want to be paying attention because soul attraction percentage is an indication of the chance and types of random events that could occur housed at the top of your screen. These random events throughout your ritual can be interacted with for a chance to gain extra rewards from XP bonuses to additional resources. So there's your lean forward skilling mechanic. So you could either do it 100% AFK or you could pay full attention to have the ability to get just a little bit more.
Yes.
And they say they don't want to spoil the experience of discovering these for yourself, but these events are an optional way to boost your gains from rituals. And then once
you want to know what the ink is, like that's I'm tripping on the ink.
I think you're just provided it. I mean, like that would make sense because it's not shown in the list, I don't think.
Yeah, it seems like that's probably either a gold sink, something you buy from a NPC, or it could be like the archaeology tools, just something you get, and it's on your tool belt, and you just have it forever.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Once the ritual ends, you gain your outputs, and then outputs head straight to the ritual chest, so you can focus on completing as many as you like before picking up your rewards. And with this, they've shown an example of a low-level ritual, but with more potent rituals unlocked, you'll have a different experience as you go throughout each of these different rituals. Then we get to the point where you can customize them for your playstyle based on the alteration glyphs. So one of the alteration glyphs shown is that it increases ritual output by 20% and soul attraction by 20%. And with this, you gain access to more bonus forms of these glyphs that allow you to customize elements of rituals to fit your needs or playstyle. Multiply represents growth and expansion, and speed represents speed and rapidity. Go ahead, Zerdon, there, just speak.
I was just going to say, there's the ghostly ink in the
right there. Yeah, requires so that is going to be an item. Yeah.
That is going to be an item. So maybe a gold sink, maybe a reagent from like the lowest level of tier of ritual.
It could also be like a divination thing where you have an option of just creating basic things like that, and you get your ink, just like you can make divine energy. Then there's attraction, which represents guidance and attraction, increasing soul attraction percentage. And with these glyphs unlocked, you have more control of your ritual experience, however, at the cost of more complex or rarer components. So with this, the question becomes, do you focus on gaining more reagents at the cost of more XP, or do you ramp up the intensity of random events looking for maximum potential gains? I'm already seeing many different layers of optimization here, which I think we'll be jumping up and down about on launch.
So. Yeah. And I see it. What's nice about this is I think it's going to, you know, naturally it would change because there's times when you're going to be grinding and you want all of the XP you can get. You need to get to the next level or next tier or the next unlock. There are going to be other times when you need impure essence to keep going. Where you need, you know, whatever one of those reagents is for a certain thing. So, I mean, you're going to keep kind of reconfiguring it for wherever you're at, you know, in the game at that time.
Yeah, and you know, I think we got a bit of a brief idea of how this works here, but I still feel like we're going to have to go through the UI and experience the flow for ourselves to get a true sense of how this works. Because, you know, you can write it down all you want, but I don't think this is enough to, you know, pass judgment of it at this point. That would be a pretty silly thing to do. So
I'm pretty excited about the systems that I see represented. It looks very well designed, very well thought through. Is it fun? We'll see.
Good point.
Is it fun to play? That's the question.
And then we get to rewards. With this, one of the most critical parts of the ritual is to commune with the dead and return them to the Well of Souls. The number of souls in the Well of Soul, which is permanent and does not deplete, is tied to accessing more potent talents, which increases your necromancy powers with newer upgraded abilities, which we heard about before, the talent pool.
Yep.
And with this, as you grow your necromantic power, you'll want to regularly return to the ritual site to bring more souls back to the city. So that's your consistent way of upping and learning new skills. Let's see. Rituals also have an important part to play in the combat gameplay loop in a more direct fashion. For example, if you want to use incantations, which are necromancy spells outside of your core abilities that offer additional benefits such as accessing shield defenses without a shield, you will need to convert rune essence into impure essence for use in creating necrotic runes. So there's going to be a ritual for that as well.
And then, presumably, if you want GP,
precisely,
you sell the runes.
Precisely. And then they say for those times when engaging in combat doesn't fit your schedule or you're simply looking for a change of pace, rituals will be another route to leveling necromancy in a way that works for you.
Another note on that last point, I saw, I think it was Timbo said on Reddit that rituals do not award constitution XP.
Ooh.
So if you're an HP peer, rituals are also for you.
Interesting.
Although I guess now you can block HP.
Yeah, you can block HP, XP.
That's a little bit less important, I guess, but
yeah.
Still.
Can you block HP, XP? I thought that was one of the ones you couldn't block HP, reward, XP.
I haven't.
Or no, it's,
to be honest with you, I haven't gone in.
Yeah,
I thought you could block it any skill, XP, but I have not looked at it.
I think there's still
detail.
Something with HP due to HP prayers, but HP peers, but I don't remember the exact way it works right now with Nastroth there. But in any case, I feel like we're learning more, and I feel like we're moving along that path of from being cautiously optimistic to being ready to go on launch day, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
And I really do hope that these colors work for you, Tanis, based on what we got here.
You know, if they don't, as long as I have workarounds, I'm...
Like mouse over text or something, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to paste the picture I want you to look at in producer's chat right now, and tell me if you can see the yellow-green on that, the yellow-green outline. Like, based on what I just pasted there, would you know where to click? I'll give you a minute to pull that up in chat. And
see see one spot.
Like right at the center of the image, right?
Well, yes, I guess that would be the middle. It's like the second row of stones in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Right in the middle.
Here's the thing, though. Like, the reason that stands out is it's the border. I don't really see anything different. It's just the border.
I think the border is all you're supposed to see at that point. I think from what I was reading, the border is the highlight that says click here to do thing.
But that's clear enough?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell a difference.
Okay, then the other one. Can you see the writing in the center of the stone?
I didn't see writing.
Okay. And obviously, I mean, pre-release content, not that we're, you know, grading for accessibility right now or anything like that.
Yeah, this is still in development in some form.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see like a circle with a line through it.
That's all that's there.
All right. Anything else on these rituals before we go? I feel like we went through the post, and that's really all we have to say right now without being able to pronounce too much on it.
Yeah.
All right. I found it interesting how the rituals, they don't have a fixed input item.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the ritual selection but the ritual interface, you can choose what bones you want. So that'll be... That's an interesting design decision. I guess higher tier bones will give you more reward. Probably more bones will be more XP. The mementos might be more something else.
Yeah.
I guess that's how you modify them.
It reminds me, I really need to get on my bone collecting. I haven't been doing any of that.
Are you doing the parcels?
Yes, I am.
I mean, they give loads. I have thousands of bones now.
Yeah, it's almost like that's the way we were supposed to do it, right?
Yeah, I think it does seem intentional.
So, all right. Makes me also wonder if the slime we get from those parcels will have a use.
Oh, son of a! I've been throwing it away. I wonder if that's the ink.
Oh God!
Oh,
shit.
Oh,
because you know how painful that is to collect. Otherwise,
I didn't know what it was.
You've never done the Ectofunctus?
Oh, is that the slime it's talking about?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's the slime from the Ecto. Yeah.
Oh,
it is better now that the Mauritania legs have more teleports.
But Tanis probably doesn't have that because he hasn't done temple trekking.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, we're going to keep our slime just in case.
Still got 11 days.
Yeah.
It ends on the 17th, I think. You got time. Yeah. You got time.
Oh, boy. I hate to throw that bucket of slime on your head.
Well, you know, they're probably very cheap, too, right now. Like, if it's tradable anyway. Sure it is.
I don't even know if it is tradable.
I don't think it is.
It might be. I don't know.
No, buckets of slime are not tradable.
Oof. Okay, well, then.
All right.
So then it can't be the ink, probably.
Well, you could add something to
it. It could be.
And then it becomes tradable.
Yeah, I mean, it also might just be a deliberately untradable resource.
It could
although
be.
If they did that, I assume they'd have to give a different way to collect it, because the ecto fungus is just awful.
Yeah, there's no way that that would be the only. Interesting. Well, I mean, I know the key. I'm keeping my buckets of slime now. I mean, jeez. And not all of us get dyes, Shane, so not all of us can just.
Yeah.
I'm holding on to that until they update it, because that thing has been tanking in value. It's only worth 600 mil now, last I looked.
Oh, man, only 600 mil for free. Man.
It's that high? I thought it was 300.
Oh. Oh. Okay. Damn. Wow, that's cratered.
What is...
Well, then...
Yeah, ELY has it at 320 to 330.
Okay.
As of today.
Well, with that, let's move on to our achievements of the week, then.
Okay, so that's me starting us off. July 5th, we have Sparty Pants with 120 construction. And on the 4th of July, we have just some absolute nerd who got 99 fire making. And also on July 4th, 99 crafting, Todd.io 22.
Right on. Continuing on, we have Alfie Line on the 2nd with 99 woodcutting, Hephaestio 5 with 99 farming, Earth, Lord Earth with 99 fishing on the 2nd, and Nyard with 99 woodcutting also on the 2nd.
All right, then we have Jam Andy 52 with 120 attack on the 1st. We have Lord Earth with another 99 agility on the 1st. Tapping Spy with 120 archaeology on the 1st, and Arcane with 120 hunter on the 30th.
Nicely done.
Very nice.
All right. And then we head on to Pick of the Week, where Zerdones brings us a full-length, hour and 24-minute documentary.
Yeah, I do love my YouTube documentaries, apparently. So this one is called Why It's Rude to Suck at Warcraft. It's about EverQuest Online. It's about World of Warcraft. It's a video that's kind of hard to summarize, because it's a video essay that doesn't quite have a thesis so much as it just sort of talks about the subject. But it's broadly about the way expert practices and the attitude by which being good at a game is a desirable quality, the way that that attitude becomes part of a game's culture and becomes disseminated, and how it reinforces itself in ways you wouldn't necessarily expect. Like one of the observations they make that it makes complete sense when you hear it, but I'd never really thought of it this way, is when you engage in theory crafting. So like I'll pick on myself. When I'm preparing for Fresh Start and I'm making my little quest, how do I optimally do quests thing, I'm theory crafting on how to do quests quickly.
Yeah.
And when I do that and I put that out into the world and I say, this is how you do quests quickly, not only am I... I've sort of become an agent not only of the strategy, but of the idea of expert practice itself. I'm not just advocating for this is the best way to do quests. I'm advocating for the idea of playing the game in a way in which I'm optimizing quests is a good thing.
Efficiency
and the
escape.
More people, right? It's exactly. It's
or seeking the out the most DPS.
Yep, exactly. Like that's. I think that's. Because, the reason I brought this up is because it is about World of Warcraft, but I see a lot of RuneScape in it. And I think, like, since you mentioned optimizing DPS, I think this is where a lot of the debate about Switchscape comes from. Because Switchscape is not required. With the exception of shield switching, maybe, you really don't need to switch gear for anything.
Yeah.
Unless you are trying to optimize kill times. And the idea of Switchscape being a problem is predicated on the idea that optimizing kill times is the correct way to play the game. which, like, to be clear, if that's the way you enjoy playing the game, that's fine. Like, it's not, the issue is, it's not making a value judgment one way or another. It's not that you're wrong for that. It's sort of, it's observing the fact that that's not an inherent quality. It's something that is being, that you are imposing on yourself, and that is being sort of imposed on you by the community surrounding you.
It's like the fact you join a guild or something or a clan, but at the end of the day, you could get by without doing that. You are, in effect, making that decision that you want to play at that higher level. And, you know, I feel like we cater to that to a degree, but I also feel like we cater to the average as well, where most of the game is designed. And, you know, based on what we're talking about here, I definitely want to watch this now, because you could also sub this in and say why it's rude to suck at Star Trek Online, and you could see why, you know, why it's so annoying when you go into a run and you see, oh, this person's only doing 12k DPS. What's wrong with their ship setup? Well, that's how the majority of the people play the game. But at the same time here, I have these endgame builds that are capable of pushing 1,000,000 DPS. It's a decision I made because it's something I like to do. It's my endgame. Does it go into any of that sort of discussion?
To some extent. They talk a little bit about gearing. They tell actually a very interesting story about a friend of theirs who was participating in one of WoW's random gear drop mechanics, and they got a best-in-slot item. This will probably make sense in the context of Stowe. It doesn't make a ton of sense in the context of RuneScape, but items in WoW and in a lot of other MMOs have like a numerical value assigned to them. So you can get the same item at different levels of quality.
Yeah.
So this guy, he had like a 1 in 91 chance to roll for his item. He got it at not the highest level, and he got just torn apart by his guild because they were like, oh, you should have done more stuff to get a better chance at getting your higher, like, this is, why did you take that? That's a waste. And, like, that's, those kinds of self-reinforcing social practices. Because, like, you were talking about Stowe and endgame builds in Stowe as a thing that you decide to do, and that's true. But it's also a thing that is supported by the community as the right way to play.
Bingo.
It is the correct way to play the game is to gear for endgame. And that's not objectively true. That's a social practice. Or that's a system of behavior, a practice of behavior that's become codified socially as the correct way to play.
Right.
And the effect that has is very strong.
Right. And you know, we can apply this to RS as well, in that if you're perking out weapons and such and you go for some off-the-wall weird setup, you're going to get side eyes from people wondering why you didn't go for something more meta, right?
Exactly. Well, like, that's like Thaxi's whole thing. Or Taxi, sorry. Sorry, Taxi, if you're listening. That's his whole thing with Aftershock, right? Aftershock has become codified as the best in slot.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
A lot of people go for it, even though, like, that's a social practice. Like, it is probably, I don't know the numbers on it.
It's a few percentage difference.
In more detail. It probably makes a big difference if you're already in the top 1% of PDMers. For most people, it's not, like, it's not the first thing you should be worrying about.
Right, and the reason I don't is because it's hideously expensive and you need it on every switch.
Right.
So, I feel like this is a wider look at exactly what we see in the game community, and I bet there's lessons for this in RS. So thank you for bringing this up as pick of the week. I want to watch this now, and I'm wondering if there's any sort of discussions we can have on these sorts of cultural things that have developed in RS and where else we see them in our games. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's a very interesting topic personally.
Yeah, yeah. All right. My pick of the week, we're doing two this week, and this one takes us back in time to the good old days of Battlefield 1942, Battlefield Bad Company 2, so on and so forth. But it's not Battlefield. It's a game called BattleBit Remastered, which is best described as what if Minecraft became a first-person shooter with Battlefield's mechanics? And that's BattleBit Remastered. It's an indie game. It's about $15 US. And the interesting part about this, when you look at this, it's absolutely destroying the Steam charts right now. There's thousands upon thousands of people playing this, and it only launched on June 15th, less than a month ago.
Oh.
Yeah. And everything you expect from Battlefield, you can find here. And you get that without getting all of the stuff that you have, that people have come to hate with the EA versions of it. And, you know, we're kind of wondering and watching this, is EA going to send these guys a cease and desist? Because it's basically Battlefield. Granted, they don't have any of the Battlefield branding or any of the music and mechanics or any of the music and maps to it. But it's, you know, your general conquest, capture, point control, weapons, vehicles, and the likes.
Yeah, it's a multiplayer FPS. It's every multiplayer FPS.
Yeah.
Except it looks... Yeah. Honestly, until they start showing the other character models, it looks like GoldenEye.
Yeah.
It's like N64 graphics, which is very, very nostalgic for me.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things people are loving to play with this. Another thing is, and I haven't seen this since the Tribes 2 days, it supports up to 254 players in a single map, 127 versus 127 as the biggest.
With two whole polygons per character, you can.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's
It's also got, you know, the usual 64 versus 64, 32 versus 32 and whatnot. So you can go for smaller modes if you want to, but there's just something about going into these game servers with, you know, 200 plus people that I feel like we haven't seen in ages that makes it really, really interesting. For this. And that's why it's the pick of the week. It's still early access. And if you look at the Steam charts, it's just completely taken the charts by storm. And it's only been out for a few weeks at this point in time. So if you're looking for a new FPS game and you don't want all the mumbo jumbo of the modern stuff out there in something like Call of Duty Warzone or any of the older Battlefield games, which I don't think they're working on any new ones, this is something you can look at, and like you said, very low poly counts with this. System requirements, 8 gigs of RAM, i5, 4th generation or above, and a GeForce GTX 600 series or higher. Those are the recommended requirements. Keep in mind, we're on the the GeForce 4000 series right now. So
minimum 6 gigs of RAM and a GTS 450.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, when you put it in that perspective, pretty much anybody could play this. So Windows only at this point. It'd be interesting to see if this works on the Steam Deck. Tannis, I think we...
Yeah, I'm sure it would.
Yeah. I do...
Most games were Steam Deck certified.
Yeah, yeah.
See this anywhere. But...
Do you play any shooters, Tannis?
Not well.
Okay.
I play some through, you know, story and stuff, but not...
Yeah, and that would be my word of caution to you if you were to pick this up, is that there are snipers in this, so you do risk the possibility of getting domed from across the map.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's the pick of the week. You can find the links to both of these in the show notes at update.show. All right. What have we been doing on RS? Let's start with you, Tannis.
A lot of wood cutting, a lot of elder planks. That has been the majority of it.
Have you completed your second Imkando hatchet yet?
Probably, but I haven't even looked in the bank for
Where you have pieces. Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
All right, Zerdones?
I haven't been doing too much, to be honest with you. I did the wood cutting, obviously, got my hatchet.
Yeah.
I've been sort of poking at daily tasks and Reaper tasks to get those last wills, get me bones and my slime.
Yeah, you got to make sure you do those daily.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, with the Treasure Hunter promos giving wills, and not just like wills with every key, but you can just roll wills on the table.
Yeah, and we knew they'd do that at some point. So
yeah. Yeah, you get quite a lot of them.
All right.
So I've got quite a lot of the cosmetic rewards from that, which I'm quite happy with. I think I got all of the Barrow's rings, not the Shadow rings, but just the base Barrow's rings. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good and important that they do that, because you know those were always limited Halloween events. So it's good to see those coming back in a way that's easy to gain access to that for people who didn't have them before. And you know, we always worried about that. You know, where are they going to put these in game for people who weren't there? And you know, we mentioned last week about how obscenely rare the die is, but at the end of the day, you could still come away from this netting the bulk of the cosmetic rewards too, which I think is a nice thing. So
yeah, I mean, because yeah, like I wasn't playing for most of these, so a lot of this stuff is just inaccessible to me. Am I over the moon that it's coming from what is essentially a gacha game? No, but I'd rather have it than not.
Yeah, yeah. Fun discussion on that last week too, of course, for folks who missed that. All right. As for me, I recomped this past weekend. After we finished the show last week, I got my third and final Raptor Slayer challenge done. So Slayer's done for a while. I got all three of those recomped, and that was the end of that. Thank God that's over. I realize, yes, I'm hurting you right now, Tanis, by saying that, but oh boy, Slayer was not fun, even with the Raptor tasks. But the thing that I actually had to go and complete to finish comp was that Gaps, Traps, and Laps agility course achievement. I see. Of course, I'd got 99 agility way back in the day before they added that. So I basically had to spend probably a better part of an hour running around the world to all these different courses and running each one of them once to do that. And goes without saying that the difficult part of that is actually getting to some of the courses, dare I say.
I bet.
Yeah.
So
some of them are not always centrally located.
Yeah, Penguin.
Yes.
Werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Werewolf, I don't think is too bad because there's the Cannabis Lodestone, but
and the bigger problem with the werewolf was the kicking of the ball.
I was gonna say figuring out how,
that's mechanically odd, but yeah.
Daily reminder that the Brimhaven agility circuit still exists that needs to be updated at some point to be brought into the modern gameplay perspective with that, because it has those 2006 levels of graphics with it, and I don't know where it lands XP wise, but boy, even just running it for once to get the one ticket was not fun. Not fun.
Yeah, that has not aged well. Mm-hmm. I mean, very little about agility has aged all that well, if we're being honest.
Yeah, but it kind of needs a rework or something to it, other than, you know, hey, here's Silverhawk boots.
Yeah, needs a bit of a spit shine.
Yeah. But aside from that, I started shaking off the rust for PVM, given the fact that, you know, necromancy is going to be combat related. And, I can report that the rust is real. Back when I was PVMing daily, and, you know, I haven't done any major, combat in game since probably November last year, in terms of like Reaper assignments, bosses, and the like. I used to run my carrot back kills about 2 minutes, 20 seconds. That used to be my kill time on those, about that.
Wow.
I've fallen down to about 3 minutes now after coming back.
Oh, misery. Agony, whoa.
Like, I don't know where that lands in terms of everybody else, but that's where I'm at now. And safe to say I need to re-examine some of my keybinds, see what feels natural now compared to where we're at. Because I hate to say it, combat with EOC is still very much about knowing your UI and where the buttons are and what to push at the right time and what to do. So,
yep.
But that's a topic for another day, of course. I have yet to take a run out at Magic. I kind of want to shake the rust off with my range setup. But getting slowly back into the scheme of that. So that's what I've been up to on RS, a little bit more involved than previous weeks. But I believe with that, we can wrap this episode of Update up. Thanks to the both of you guys for being here. And of course, big, huge thank you to those of you guys who have already signed up and been at the tier before we unveiled it, of our RSBNB update experience on Patreon. Thank you so much to everybody involved in that. Truly means the world to us. Patreon.com/RSBNB if you want to see what all of that is about and sign up even for the most basic tier at $1 a month to gain access to the archaeology monthly bit that we talked about and all of the other ones. You can just do that. Hey, if you just want the one monthly bit, go sign up, get the episode, stay for a month and then come back. 100% allowed with that. So, but you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe. And we're on all the podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, and more, including Amazon Music. Visit update.show/subscribe and just click on the one that you want. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. There's where we post the video version of the show and our nibbles as well. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Bye.